Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Julie Hughes. I am a midwife, a mom of four, and a woman with deep curiosity and reverence for the natural transitions that we go through in our life. This podcast explores the rite of passage known as puberty. We will be diving deep into topics around the changing mind, body, and spirit of girls and their relationships with themselves, their families, and their peers. This podcast is brought to you by the Powerful Puberty Project. PowerfulPuberty.com. All information contained in this podcast is for educational purposes only.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. So today I'm going to be talking about a question that's been coming across my email inbox more frequently. So I felt like it was time to address it in podcast form. And this question is really coming from moms of younger girls, so perhaps 8 and 9 is probably the most common age, mostly 8, about changes that the parents are beginning to see in their bodies. And they're wondering, first of all, is it normal, how to address them, and really how to slow it down. And so that's what I really want to talk about in this podcast. So there's a lot of different ways that I could take this question, and that a lot of different ways that this podcast can go, because in some way there's not a clear-cut answer to this question, right? Each one of our bodies is so incredibly individual. We have our own unique hormonal blueprint, and really that blueprint in some ways can change each and every month, and in a lot of ways can change based on our input. So what we are doing in terms of our own health and wellness can directly and completely change the hormonal blueprint or map inside, right? And so because each of our bodies is individual and each of our bodies is unique, and then we also have genes, right? There's like a certain part of puberty that is hereditary, right? So I would love to give you a simple answer, and I'm going to give you as clear and concise of an answer as possible, and speak to a larger audience, I guess. So meaning that this isn't obviously going to be an individualized conversation, but it's probably going to give you a lot of food for thought and a lot of great ideas and a lot of information on whether or not this is something you would like to explore and perhaps even be, you know, concerned about in your own daughter's life. So specifically in this episode, I'm going to cover what technically defined by, you know, the medical industry is normal for puberty, what we are seeing shift hormonally in the last decade or two amongst this age group and puberty, and what is considered, I guess I would call it, the new normal. How can you support your daughter's body through all sorts of different ways? What are some other signs you might be seeing that may or may not be hormonal? I'm going to talk about stress and anxiety, how to talk to girls about this early change, and a little bit on a quick history of women in our own relationship to our reproductive health. So technically, let's just jump right in. Puberty is, if you look at any medical textbook, or I don't know, heck, if you even just Google it, right, you will see that normal would be 8 years or older having any sort of physical puberty changes. That would be normal. Anything starting at the age of 8 is considered normal. Anything prior to the age of 8 is considered precocious. And there are all sorts of different, I mean, I'm not going to talk about it, but like that's its own conversation. There's all sorts of different things that people would like you to do, right? So I'm not going to go into that. So this is new. This is very, very new, this 8-year-old as being normal. And in fact, it's new because there's so many of girls nowadays are hitting this 8-year-old mark and actually beginning to develop breast buds or other things. And there's a reason behind it. I would contend that perhaps, generally sweeping statement, it's not okay it's new but not normal, and that we are, to use a term from Aviva Rom, we are hormonally hothousing our youth with all sorts of different chemicals and things that they're interacting with on the regular daily basis, and it is causing massive changes in our daughters' bodies at an early age. And there are reasons why I would say that for this sort of newness, this sort of amount of girls that are seeing this early age, beginning of puberty, I would say that I have some concerns about it. One of my concerns is that in general, we are also seeing a much, much higher rate of period issues amongst all age groups of women. It is women's health issues and concerning our reproductive and hormonal health is, you know, some of the top killers of women are heart health, cardiovascular health, which is directly related to our hormones. Osteoporosis, again, directly relating to our hormones and our hormonal health earlier in life. One of our top surgeries are cesarean sections, which are needed sometimes, and there's a time and a place for everything, as well as hysterectomies. Again, time and place for everything. It does concern me, however, that, nearly 1 in 3 babies is born via C-section, and 1 in 2, so 50% or more of women over the age of like 45 no longer have a uterus. It's like the number one surgery that is performed. So, having said that, there is a much higher chance of period issues, including polycystic ovarian syndrome, and just hormonal imbalance in lots of different ways that I'm not going to go in, if your daughter starts puberty on the younger side. This does not mean it's 100% positive, right? So there is, again, the genetics. There is a lot of factors at play that I'm going to discuss today. The other concern is diabetes. So girls that start their periods and just development on the younger side have a much higher risk of diabetes. And without going into too much detail, polycystic ovarian syndrome, or PCOS, to me is the underlying issue for that is actually, well, obviously a hormonal imbalance that is caused by a blood sugar issue. So, of course, diabetes often goes with polycystic ovarian syndrome. The other issue is bone growth. So when your hormones kick on, the bone development starts. And if it's starting before it's actually able to be supported in other ways, it can actually be quite damaging. And then not to mention the emotional and social implications of starting such massive growth at the age of 8. It's hard enough to talk to 11, 12-year-olds about their body shifting and growing breasts and having periods as, you know, they're not adults, but their bodies are beginning to practice. And in some ways, they can feel those changes socially and emotionally. Those kind of correspond. So it's not a very hard stretch for them. But at 8 years old, when these girls are and still playing dolls, you know, perhaps, or still just playing, right? They're just in a different place. They're just in a very different place socially and emotionally that makes it much harder to discuss and understand and grasp why their bodies are changing. It can be much harder for them. So what are we seeing the shift hormonally in the last decade or so? I mean, I guess we also have to ground the conversation that overall our fertility rate is drastically declining. Our reproductive health in general is drastically declining and has a whole lot of, we have a whole lot of disease in the body, and it's showing in our fertility. And that to me can be scary in some ways, but I also know how resilient the body is. So to me, it's a warning sign for humanity that we are seeing so much disease in our fertility cycles. And that is because one of the first things that begins to shut down, right? So like in the body, the body is going to prioritize stress over fertility. So it's going to deal with a stress response, and it's going to kind of shut down the pregnenolone, which is the precursor for progesterone, which is one of the main hormones that's involved in fertility and keeping a baby, right? And so they call it a pregnenolone steal. That is what happens in our body. Our body prioritizes our own life, our own survival over fertility, right? It's like survival of the fittest, putting your oxygen mask on first. It's a beautiful thing that our body does. However, it's quite concerning that our fertility in general is drastically decreasing. And it's not just among women. If you look at the sperm counts of young men, in fact, they're nearly half what they were just a decade or two ago. And so it's something for us to really look at, right? And not just say, oh, it's normal. It's normal for 8-year-olds to start puberty as a whole, right? I also would also argue that for some 8-year-olds, it is actually normal. We are seeing the age of puberty become younger and younger. Typically, when you start your menstrual cycle is genetic to your matrilineal line. So nowadays we're seeing girls start 6 months to 1 year earlier. It is also not across the board, right? I've had moms who were twins that were in a purity class that I teach that they were twins and they started 2 years apart. So these are people who share very closely the same DNA and they started completely different times. However, if you were doing a little chart, if you were graphing, most girls start around the same time as their mom, but they're starting up to a year earlier. And many of them are starting very early. So what do these girls have in common? What are some things we're seeing? We're seeing Black and Hispanic girls start puberty earlier and earlier. I would say that there's many, many factors that are underneath that. One is economics, socioeconomic status. I would say that probably if you did a chart of actual socioeconomic status, probably those on the lower end of the scale are, I would argue across the board, are actually starting puberty earlier. Part of that, and a big part of that, is due to stress. A big part of that is due to what they are exposed to, where they are living, what they are environmentally exposed to, and what they are eating. And yeah, I guess I'll leave it there. So Black and Hispanic girls often, you know, not again, not always, but if you just look at the history of our country and what has occurred to allow Black and Hispanic girls to be in this lower socioeconomic status. Also racism. I mean, that is so there is DNA in our DNA, in our very genetics, we store trauma. And so that is being passed on to the next generation, right? We also find these groups of people having higher rates of diabetes as well, so lower socioeconomic status, and women of color, particularly Black and Hispanic girls, we see the rates of diabetes as well. And so that often has to do with obesity and what they're intaking in their body and what they really have access to. And even like access to education around knowing health and wellness for the body, let alone actually being able to, you know, if you're living in a food desert, it's much harder to access good food along with money and economics. So we are seeing the incidence across the board of disease in the body be much higher among all women. And most of this starts really early. And so how can you, knowing all this and not trying to depress anyone, because I always believe that there is power in knowledge and that I also believe that our bodies are incredibly resilient. So our bodies are striving to be in balance, in the optimal balance for our own body. And so the more you know about your body, the more you know about your daughter's body and the processes that it undergoes, the more you know what's normal and what's not normal, and seek out support rather than putting band-aids on things, the more powerful that you can become, the more supportive that you can become, and it's not rocket science. You do not have to go to medical school for years upon years and become an OBGYN to know the lay of the woman's body. In fact, if you really look at it, I would argue that the way that we are medicated, again, not having these sweeping statements of every time you're on birth control pills, which if you haven't checked out that podcast, birth control pills as a form of healthcare. I check that one out. It's the one I did prior to this. Just the way we treat our women's bodies, the way we understand women's bodies, and really even the way we structure our society, not in relation to the cycle of a woman's body. It's all quite detrimental to us. So it is not lost. There's no need to fear. And it's time to empower ourselves through actually understanding our own bodies. Take the power back of that understanding. Share it with other women. Talk about this. This is how things changed way back in, you know, the 70s and even before that. Women get together. They talk about what they don't like. And things change. And it doesn't have to show up in the scientific literature first. You know, as a midwife, one thing I know was that for a while, all doctors, OBGYNs, were doing episiotomies in the hospital, because their thought was, if you cut a tear, it'll be much easier to sew up, and it'll be much more helpful for the women. So they were cutting episiotomies for everyone for years and years and years and years. And then the research was saying, oh, that's actually not true. It's not helpful. It's actually harming women, because it's like if you take a piece of paper and you rip it a little bit and then you apply force, it's going to rip much harder than if you're actually just tugging on either side of a piece of paper. Hopefully you see that analogy in your head. But the research was saying this is actually not good. It's actually quite harmful. We're getting a lot more tears and deeper tears and more wounds. And it's actually, you know, it's easier in some ways to sew up a vagina that has a episiotomy, because it's just a straight line. So it's easier on the doctor, but it's not easier on the mom, and it's not beneficial. And so the research out there said that, but it took women standing up and saying, stop cutting me. I don't want to be cut. It's not needed. If I tear, I tear. So it took women to stand up for that to change. That's how the policy changed around that. It was not science. Science is slow. And consumers are fast. So there is tons of ways to find out information around this, is basically what I'm saying. And you can help support your own daughter's body. And really, you can help support your body by knowing your own body, so that you can help support your daughter's body. And most of us, many of us, didn't get that information. I definitely did not. So how can you support your daughter's body? Well, one simple way is through something called endocrine disruptors. You need to know about them, and you need to take steps to rid your home and lifestyle of the ones that you can actually control. So what are they? They are things that we are exposed to. They are chemicals that live in our water, in our air, in our cleaning products, in our food containers, in our personal care products, in our makeup, in our air fresheners. I was just in my mom's house the other day, and she had a Febreze on, and it's Febreze has high levels of chemicals that are endocrine disruptors. And my daughter is 14, and it was in the house. So what are those endocrine disruptors do? Those are just a few places they're found. They are found in many, many places. Well, they mimic the estrogen in our system. They act in our system like our system, our inside of our bodies. Look at it. Perceive it to be estrogen, but it acts oftentimes the majority of the endocrine disruptors acts like estrogen on steroids. So estrogen is the main female hormone that builds up your uterine lining amongst so many other things. I mean, it does so many other things. But when you have an excess of estrogen in your body, it causes the uterine lining to build and build and build and build and build. And it causes the balance between estrogen and progesterone to be out of balance, right? And so if one is out of balance, the whole system then becomes out of balance. So the estrogen that we're seeing through endocrine disruptors accumulates. It's not as easily cleaned by our liver. It's not as easily processed in our body, and it's stored in our fat cells. So our body sees them as estrogen, doesn't know how to process them, doesn't know how to get rid of them, and it becomes toxic to your body. It causes an imbalance that occurs, and it can be a major attributing factor to the imbalance that we are seeing. It can be a major contributing factor to girls starting puberty earlier. If you want to know more about endocrine disruptors, you can go on my website, powerfulpuberty.com. I have a blog post there that has some pretty simple ways to see where they are in your house and simple steps to take them out, just easy steps that are economical, that anybody can do. And to start breaking down, you know, like start breaking down the smells. Like, we think smells are clean. We associate cleanliness with a certain smell. Well, those smells are often where the endocrine disruptors are found, right? And so just simple things like that, buying things or making your own cleaning products, which is what I do. And it can be so much cheaper, maybe a little bit more time consuming, but not really. And yeah, so you can check that out over at powerfulpuberty.com. How else can you support your daughter's body? Supporting her through vital minerals that many of us are deficient in. So our body is that intricate system that relies on the wholeness of us. We are not just the hormones, progesterone and estrogen or serotonin, or, you know, we are, those are simply parts of the whole puzzle. And as much as we try to control those two particular hormones, and as much as I talk about those two particular hormones, it's a battle that we can't win, because there's so much more to the whole picture. We are also very resilient. So for a while, when we are deficient in one mineral, we can keep going without it affecting us, because the other parts of the body kind of take over and help out, right? But if you go on that way for a long time, it does begin to affect us, and we feel those effects. And it's not a secret. I think it's pretty well known nowadays that our soil is deficient in a lot of the vital minerals because of the way that we have farmed, and even the pesticides that we do, or even organic. Even if you buy organic, the soil is still quite depleted of its nutrients that we had. So a lot of those vital minerals are not there. And then we have the SAD diet, the standard American diet, which causes all sorts of issues with our gut health, all sorts of issues with our blood sugar levels, and just a lack of good nutrition for our body. And this affects kids younger and younger now. The increase of obesity and diabetes in children is like 30% in the last 5 to 10 years. And it's directly impacting the hormones, directly, not like correlative. It is directly causative, impacting the hormones. It is the whole system. So one of the most common things that I support grown women, adult women, in their own period issues is working on their intake of minerals. And that, for many women, that can be it depends on, you know, what they've got going on. But it can be as simple as just intaking their minerals, and that can balance their body enough. And they're very surprised by that. So puberty is a crucial time in the life cycle development, and there are key vitamins and minerals that are needed more in this time of life than even in other times of life. It's that transition phase, right? And so getting those specific vitamins and minerals is really, really crucial to having that balanced system. It's crucial for, even if you're not starting period early or puberty early, it's really crucial for having a an experience of the menstrual cycle that isn't insanely painful and horrible, right? And so oftentimes it's just due to vitamins and minerals. Heavy metals are found, I was recently reading something that said that across the board, I can't remember how many people, it was well over 1,000 people that they had tested their blood over all different socioeconomics, all different groupings of people, right? They tested their blood and every single one of them had heavy metals in high levels in their body. Didn't matter what they were eating. I mean, obviously there was some more than others, but everybody had heavy metals in their body. Heavy metals come to us in all sorts of different ways. Again, the air we breathe, the food we can intake. I mean, it comes to us in so many different ways. So heavy metals can be a major factor in starting puberty early. And so there's something called chelation therapy that is basically like a heavy metal detox. It needs to be done with somebody who really knows what the heck they're doing, because if you release the heavy metals too rapidly in the body, it can be quite toxic, right? You're overloading the body and the body doesn't know what to do with all these toxins. As right now, they're kind of stored in the body. It's very different than them racing around in the bloodstream and asking to get rid of them, right? Asking to process and excrete them. So heavy metals is definitely a place to look. There's all sorts of naturopaths and doctors that can do all sorts of different testing, you know, hair follicle samples and things like that, that can look at not only what minerals you're deficient in, but also what the metals look like inside of your body, right? Also gut dysregulation. So that standard American diet, it has caused such a dysregulation in our microbiome and our gut. Inside of our gut, we have something called an estrobolome. This is where estrogen is processed and other things happen inside there. And that's inside of our gut. And so if our gut is dysregulated, if our gut is unhappy, which is what I tell my own kids, it causes all sorts of issues, in particularly in relation to estrogen. And when you have high levels of estrogen, that is one of the reasons why you get puberty early. So having a happy gut, which is probably one of the main things I work with people on, right? And I'm not going to go into the specifics of that because we're already 27 minutes into this podcast and I was hoping it to be a little digestible for you. So importance of blood sugar regulation. Huge. It's so huge. Blood sugar regulation is key, huge, in order for your body to function properly, to kick out the estrogen when it is too much, for just everything to work well, you need that blood sugar regulation to work well. That is the thing with diabetes, obviously. That is also the thing with polycystic ovarian syndrome. It is the obesity. We have all of the estrogen storing in our fat cells. If we have way too many fat cells because we have extra body weight on us, then we have problems. I mean, we just do. So not fat shaming, not saying people have to be a certain size or weight or any of that sort of thing. Like that also can be incredibly unhealthy, honestly, to the system. But finding out what is good for you and not eating. So like one of the suggestions is really restricting the amount of white and brown foods your kiddos are eating. Like carbs, carbs are like the standard American diet for kids. If you look at even their like lunch menus, it's just like all white flour and white, and just like, it's not good. It's not good for their bodies. It just isn't. And we got to start feeding our kids junk because we're really damaging their ability to thrive from a really young age. So one of the things I look at is people's diets. And I have 4 kids. I know that sometimes they just like to eat what they like to eat. But taking out bread, taking out tons of white carbs, and adding a lot more protein into their bodies. Also exercising. That's a great way of regulating blood sugar. You know, everybody sits around on their iPods or whatever, just like getting your kids out more is also really helpful. Stress and anxiety support, it's huge. Stress and anxiety is so much higher for kids than it ever has been for so many reasons, let alone the last 2 years and what the kids have gone through. It is so crucial for kids to have tools, concrete tools that you spend time in your day supporting them in using and integrating into their life, so that stress and anxiety are a thing. You can't get away from it. I'm not saying they shouldn't even have it. It's a good thing. But they need to know how to regulate it. They need to know how to downregulate that nervous system so they're not stuck on all of the time. Because what happens, again, is that pregnenolone steal. And again, we have too much estrogen in the body. So saying all of that, those are some things that we can do to help support. And they sound maybe... In this format, as I'm going through them one by one, it can sound a little overwhelming, but when I work with people one-on-one, it doesn't seem that way. It's like simple things that you can change right now. What are the simplest things, the most cost-effective, the most easy, and then what is the next thing that we can shift, right? That's how we do it. We don't just like change the whole everything. And if you're not even there, but you're just somebody who's sent me an email because you're just like aware of it and wanting to support, these are the things that you're looking out for. So what are some other signs that you might be seeing that may or may not be normal? Because there's different signs that we might see. There's the kind of like adrenal hormones and the gonadal hormones, right? And so if you're seeing things like pubic hair, only pubic hair, in girls around the age of 8, and underarm odor, and possibly some underarm hair, but you're not seeing breast development, then you're probably looking at more of the adrenal. So it's called premature adrenarche. And this is, people would say this is also normal. It is not to do with estrogen. That's, I guess, the main point I'm wanting to tell you, is that this does not mean if you're just seeing underarm hair and body over and some, but you're not seeing the breast buds. So typically you will see breast buds first. That is the estrogen. And then you will see perhaps even years after the breast buds begin to form, it would be normal to get the pubic hair and then start menstruation, right? That would be quite a normal flow that most of us, it's not for all of us, but for most of us we would see. So if you kind of see the opposite, where there's no breast growth, but you're seeing some odor and also some pubic hair, it's probably premature adrenarche. And this is, there's a few things also that will go with it. Also, girls often be much taller in their height. So like the really, really tall girls, they could be overweight for sure. Like that is part of the picture of somebody who's going through this. It often black children, and often children who have some sort of trauma, right? Like high stress levels. Because what's happening in this is it is a increase in a male hormone, one of the quote unquote male hormones, DHEA, right? And so that is impacting the adrenal system. So I'm trying to choose my words carefully because I don't want to go into too much like medical and make this boring for you, but I can definitely, if this is something you're seeing, just reach out to me. I can talk to you more about it. But it's something that is considered normal. There's nothing that your daughter is not going to start her period soon. It doesn't have many side effects, but there's also ways you can support her for sure. Definitely ways you can support her. But that's very different than an estrogen. So if you're experiencing this, there's different ways than you would support this type of premature or early puberty than you would if somebody who's experiencing more of a gonadal or the estrogen coming into the body and needing more support to make sure that you don't have high levels of estrogen in your body, right? And so it would look very differently. Some of the things would overlap, some of the suggestion would overlap, but I do want to make it clear that there's different types of early, what we're considering normal. If you look at any medical literature, it would be normal. There's nothing that they're going to do to treat somebody who at the age of 8 is having breast growth or anything like that. And I'm saying that this new normal isn't good for us and that we should be looking at these things. Yes. So how do you talk to girls about this early change? Whew, that's a big one. I don't know that I have a clear-cut answer because, again, each girl is very individual. I do recommend as much information as possible. And in a normalizing it for her and her body, like this is just your unique expression. Your body has a unique map. It can be hard. What are your feelings? Not even it can be hard. Asking her what are your feelings about it. Maybe she doesn't think it's hard. And then really reassuring her that her body is just getting ready to be an adult. But it takes a long time to grow into adulthood. And so sometimes our bodies just start a little earlier than other people. And here are the things if she does have other things going on. Like maybe your kiddo is overweight. Maybe your kiddo is suffering from blood sugar issues. I don't know. Just like kind of telling her you're going to support her body in this transition as best as possible. And then laying out a plan. Right? So like really honoring her feelings, I guess, as always, listening to her feelings, honoring them, even helping her explore them sometimes. Because at the age of 8, I gotta say it, not always can they even explore them. Sometimes they're super vocal, super easy, that's a thing for them, and sometimes not. And so just really, you know, even being there as a guide to help her explore her feelings, and also exploring your feelings about it. Because that's probably why moms reach out to me. They're like, holy crap, I'm not ready for this. Can you help me? And so with that, I do want to say that I do support. I am not a medical doctor. I am a midwife. I do offer support and guidance and education and empowerment. Because again, I believe that we should have the education for our bodies. And that oftentimes we're not getting that education. We're not getting the support we need. And there is a time and a place for all of the extra tools that are offered in maybe a medical office. And so if that is something you need support with your daughter, even if she's in early puberty, you want to talk about what's normal, what's not normal, her specific situation. Maybe your daughter is menstruating and she's having a hard time with it. Maybe you're having a hard time with your daughter's transition. Maybe your relationship is struggling. These are all things that I am offering support with, so you can check out my website, powerfulpuberty.com. I also do, obviously, educational classes. I have an amazing online class that you can take with your daughter that's actually really fun, and I know that sounds crazy to call talking about puberty fun, but I promise it is. And so you can check that out over on my website, too. So hopefully this has helped. If you have questions, email me, hello@powerfulpuberty.com. I'm more than willing to listen to your questions. I'm happy to do podcasts. I'm happy to have podcast suggestions. So it's not me just blabbing away up here at what I think you want to hear, but tell me what do you actually want to hear. So hopefully you've enjoyed this podcast. Hopefully you found it useful, and I will see you again in a few weeks. Bye, everyone.